Committee on Labor, Tuesday, June 9, 1981, 1 p.m., Hearing Room A, Hearing on Senate Bill 434, Unemployment Compensation Benefits, Work Session, Senate Bill 209, Decedent's Wages.
Labor Committee will come to order. We were here to have a hearing on Senate Bill 434, but we're going to withdraw that bill from the hearing and not use that bill. And so we'll just have a work session on Senate Bill 209. 209 is a bill that has been around for quite a while in the committee. It was a bill introduced by the Bureau of Labor and Industries. And I think we've had a subcommittee on it, haven't we, Mr. Brewer?
No, we didn't, Senator.
Oh, we haven't, okay. Can you tell us the history of the bill, Mr. Brewer?
Yes. On February 3rd, we had a hearing on the bill, and there was several problems with the bill. Let me tell you briefly what the bill does. It deals with wage claims, and the main three areas deal with the wage claims of deceased employees, the priority of wage claims and receiverships, and voluntary wage deductions. At the end of the hearing on February 3rd, I was assigned to meet with Paul Tiffany and Bruce Hugo and to come up with some amendments. And we have done so. And in your packet, we have two sets of amendments. One, LC Draft 209-1, and some typed amendments dated February 3rd, 1981. And today we have Paul Tiffany and Vic Levy of the Bureau of Labor here for technical information and to present the rationale behind the amendments. But before we go on, the bill is on the table by 8:20.
Okay. I have a motion, please.
Senator. I so move.
Okay. Senator Kitzhaber moves Senate Bill 209 off the table. Is there any objection? Seeing and hearing none, with the quorum present, the bill is off the table. Okay. Now, fine. Let's invite Mr. Levy and who's the other gentleman?
Paul Tiffany.
Mr. Tiffany, right. Both of those gentlemen come forward and tell us about the bill and what the amendments do and so forth. Why do we need the bill to begin with?
The bill was introduced by the Bureau of Labor to correct what we felt to be some problems we were having. The administration of general wage collection activities. There were several amendments to several different sections within the statutes. If you want, would you like me to go through all of the...
Right. Again, why is it that we need the bill?
It was primarily to correct some problems that we were encountering in the enforcement of the wage collection statutes and to conform some of the statutes, for example, on... page 3 of the bill, line 20. That was an amendment to conform to the U.S. Bankruptcy Act, changes in the bankruptcy code,
okay,
so that we could bring our state statutes into line with the Bankruptcy Act.
Okay.
The first amendment that we had proposed on page 1,
the mock-up bill have the amendments in it?
Correct.
Okay.
Yes. And that, now, I'm not sure what you want me to explain. The original bill or the one with the amendments or...
Why don't you explain the amendments, and then if we have questions about the original, we'll ask you about it.
Okay.
Is all this language restored there? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The idea behind the amendment to ORS 652190 was to increase the current $1,000 limitation on a deceased employee's wages to $3,000 so that this money would be available to the employee's spouse or, in the event he had no surviving spouse, to the decedent's children in equal shares. This particular money was intended to get the wages owed to the employee, to the people who need them, very quickly, so that they could take care of immediate expenses as they need to,
We were going to take out the language and take out the not exceeding anything and just say all wages earned, and now you put back the $3,000. Why do you do that?
I understand this was a concern Senator Wingard had.
What was that?
What was the concern?
I believe that. I'm not sure.
I remember.
Go ahead.
I believe that Senator Wingard was concerned with the liquidity of the employer. If an employer had to immediately or very shortly after pay all the wages due, that may have been a sizable sum and may have affected the liquidity or the checking account or bank account of the employer. I believe that's right, Senator.
Basically, that's right.
Right. So that's why we went to $3,000 then and just kept the kept that limit in. Okay?
Raised it by two.
Raised it a couple thousand and then
yes,
left it there. Okay, fine. Go ahead.
Sometimes, Mr. Chairman, it's good.
Yes.
In many cases, those amounts would not be due until the end of the year in some cases, and there'd be no way that the employer could would have the money available to do it, and that was the other reason. Other than just plain liquidity, a lot of times, if he's a salesman, for instance, who receives money from a parent company to pay for commissions, but the parent company would not pay except on a quarterly basis or a biannually basis or an annual basis, but he might run into problems. That's the reason for it. And there might be a good argument not to do that, but if there is, let's hear it.
Okay. Is there any argument that you can think of?
We accept the...
No problems at all. Anybody have any problems with it?
Okay. I wish I accepted my amendment so easily.
Let's go ahead.
Okay. On the same page, page 1, line 17 through line 19, we note that the existing law dealing with money held by a foreign individual in the state treasury also has a $1,000 limitation. It's very easy for one of our wage collection judgments to exceed $1,000. Sometimes those judgments may go for as many as 20 years and could be that the individual is dead by the time we collect it. But we have trouble then getting it out of the treasury to get it to its rightful, the estate of the individual involved. And so this amendment, we would propose that money collected for an individual by the Bureau of Labor and Industries for wages that are due him would be excluded from this $1,000 requirement.
Okay. Is that the language, basically, 17 to 19?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Go ahead.
Okay. Next amendments, section 3 of the bill on page 2, deal with the administrative processing of wage claims. This ORS 652332 is actually what Senate Bill 228, the 1979 session, was. After working with this for approximately 2 years now, we have found that we have some problems. And we had hoped to correct them with our amendments.
Was this the bill you said that Senator Kulongoski had been involved with before?
No. That will be coming up shortly.
Be coming up. Okay.
Thank you.
These are what we would hope to do and accomplish in lines 9 through 18 is to serve the order of determination on an employer by certified mail, return receipt requested, or by personal service, and not be locked into having to serve the order of determination by mail first, and then if that doesn't work, to then go to personal service. We run into several situations where we know the employer will not accept our mail, yet we are required by the statute to send it out certified mail, restricted delivery. The fellow refuses it. We then go to the sheriff in the county and get the sheriff to serve it in the same manner as serving summons. But these amendments do, we hope, will allow us to serve that order as we would, as a person would in the service of any summons. The next amendment on line 24 of the same page, page 2, lines 24 and 26, increase the time from 10 to 20 days the employer has to respond to the order of determination, either to pay the amount found due, to request an administrative hearing, or to request a trial in court of law.
And you found the 10 days just not adequate?
It's simply not adequate.
But 20 days would be?
Yes. And that is all on page 2. On page 3, I'd like to turn these particular amendments over to Mr. Levy, since these are his technical adjustments, as we call them.
Okay.
And perhaps he can just explain them to you.
Fine, Mr. Levy. Go ahead, sir.
All right. I think there's one here that at the very top, which would be part and parcel of the at line 4 through line 7. This is still part of the administrative process of the wage claims. And number 4, at line 4, we're deleting the 30-day period for appeals and making it 60 days like all other appeals from APA orders. Mm-hmm. That's also a very short period to appeal from.
Right. And just by taking out the exception and the 60 days?
It would make it like every other administrative order issued by an agency.
Fine. Okay.
And line 6 through 7, deleting again the 30 days. This 30-day provision has to do with, in effect, a dead period following the time that the order becomes final. The order becomes final automatically after 10 days if the employer does not want a hearing or just simply concedes or defaults. And this permits the order to become final and constitute a judgment that could be filed. It would have the same effect as a regular judgment.
So by taking out the 30 days, you're effectively changing that to 10?
No, the 30 days in the mm-hmm. in the first section that we're deleting mm-hmm. will give parties who want to appeal 60 days to make up their mind rather than just the 30. It would comport with the APA.
Okay.
Section 5 at lines 6 and 7 provides there that there's a 30-day period before that order becomes final. This is to make the order become final immediately so that it becomes a judgment immediately from the time it is, in fact, final under the law.
Okay. So there's 30 days before that, though. Yeah. And then you take this other out. Okay.
Then we come to that section, which I believe Senator Kulongowski...
We did allude earlier to the $2,000 yes. difference there on line 20 of page 3. Mm-hmm. Was there any questions on that?
So why do you change it to $2,000 from $600? Because of the bankruptcy laws.
Yes, that is to conform. So this statute, we have had problems, for example, where an employer's attorney will cite this statute as his reason for not paying the full priority wages under the law, because this statute says something different than the bankruptcy statute. So when we bring these two together, then they coincide. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I think I might be able to make that just very clear. There's a provision in here for the assignment for the benefit of creditors, and that is where the problem comes up. It's another device similar to a bankruptcy where you don't have to actually go to a bankruptcy court. Someone else will help liquidate. When they do that, normally they will follow the ordinary rules of bankruptcy. If we had the same rule for a $2,000 priority for wage earners as there is in the Bankruptcy Act, then we would have no problems. What's occurred in the past is, since ours is only $600 and an employee can get more in bankruptcy, they're very hesitant to to pay the $2,000 unless the law would clearly authorize them under state law. That's the basic purpose for it.
Okay.
All right, then the next amendment is on page 4. And this is the section that Senator Kulongoski was concerned with, and perhaps if Mr. Levy can go with that, appreciate it.
The statute that we're dealing with is 652610, and specifically starting with section 3 of the statute, which is on page 4, line 1 of page 4. This statute was pretty much put together in 1977 and provided and was intended to prevent any kinds of deductions from an employee's paycheck, save and except those deductions that were expressly authorized by law. Taxes being such other kinds of deductions that were required by law to be taken out, a particular law. Section B of the statute is dealing with all of those fringe benefits. So when the employee has medical insurance, etc., this authorizes a deduction for that. Sections C and D have been the two sections that have created an immense problem in the administration of the wage collection statutes. As I understand Section C, that was primarily intended to take care of those situations not otherwise covered by the statute where the employee wanted to make a voluntary wanted to have some money deducted from his paycheck voluntarily. Might be to UGN, it might be to the credit union, it might be to anything for his benefit. And so C really became the catch-all for anything that the employee voluntarily wanted to have deducted. D, it combined with C, has given us a problem because we were totally unable to discern from the legislative history what D was intended to take care of, what specific type of deduction D was intended to take care of. What has happened as a result, I think I now understand what D was intended to take care of, and I believe what it is, is those situations where an employee would want to contribute in lieu of union dues and to be able to make that contribution. I think that that was all that D was intended to address. Our problem was is that we could not locate the legislative history. And what has in fact occurred is as follows.
I think,
Senator Groner.
Wait a minute. I was thinking of the conscience amendment. I don't know if that is it, though. No, I don't. Is that part of it? Part of the idea of the Adventist is had the conscience amendment where. In
yes.
lieu of union dues, you could pay into a charity that was agreed to by
precisely.
The and that's what that is, I think.
Mr. Chairman, what Senator Groner is telling you, if you take that out, you're going to have the Reverend Patterson come roaring in here.
You bet. You better leave it in there.
telling his wife.
I received the Liberty Award of the Adventist Church by putting them in all kinds of labor legislation.
He is the registered lobbyist for the Seventh-day Adventist Church.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. All right. Don't take that out.
Okay. I think I have a solution to the problem, and I think if I give you what has occurred, you make it clear.
Okay.
What has happened since the time that this statute or Section D was added is that employers have misused Sections C and D and have prepared agreements, and I believe there should be a copy available to you, which is only a single sample. And in essence, what the agreement is an agreement whereby the employer will deduct for all those things which the statute was initially enacted to prohibit an employer from deducting. And it sets up a mini-court system, if you will, whereby the employer levies judgment and levies execution all at the same time pursuant to this, quote, voluntary agreement, which is extracted before they ever start to work. And, of course, they're capable of citing Section C and D as the very basis for this document. As a result of this, the Bureau of Labor is engaged heavily in continuous, very expensive litigation, all as a result of these agreements, which we believe are totally contrary to the intention behind Section C and D, but that's what's there, and that's what's happening. I believe that Section C has two problems with it. One, we have the problem of, quote, whether something is voluntary. Generally, the agreement is extracted as a condition of employment. When someone first goes to work, the employer has them sign a blank slip. I hereby authorize you to deduct from my wages for whatever, any loss that occurs, any loss that I think occurs. So the thing is really not, quote, voluntary. The problem is you'll always end up in court litigating whether it was voluntary. I think it's clear that something that's extracted as a condition of employment is involuntary in that sense. And therefore suggested that to make it very clear just what the deduction is for and to prevent employers from extracting, in effect, a waiver from the employee before he even starts, we've added in that. And I think that this will take care of the deduction that Senator Kulongowski and Senator Groner were talking about here of being able to make this voluntary contribution anywhere that the employee chooses, and that would include the Adventist Church and whatever else, by simply adding that there is a voluntary signed authorization, which can be for any item, provided that the ultimate recipient of the money is not the employer.
Can you put it in lieu of union dues? So, be specific.
We would, I think so, and I'm wondering whether it might not make it very clear if we did that in Section 4 at line 10, which is really a descriptive piece of language.
Maybe to which the union and the Well, it doesn't have to be the employer. It has to be the union and the individual, the donor, the employee.
I think
you understand what I mean is, mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman, is to the employer. It's to the charity to which the employer and the employee agree.
Absolutely.
No, the union. I'm sorry, the union and the employee.
Absolutely, and I would suggest that that be put in Section 4, where we already have provision made, for example. What this Section 4 does is describes how to construe or what's all to be included. So we already say in there that nothing in the preceding sections will prohibit the checkoff dues. Nothing will prohibit contribution to a charitable organization. And if we add in there, nothing contained up there is to prohibit this particular deduction, which
Chairman?
I am a little confused about how you're amending it. What are you suggesting for amendment?
The deletion of D.
All right. That's deleted in the bill as it is. Okay, what else?
The addition of the boldface language at line 5.
Okay.
And beyond that, I believe what Senator Groner is saying could be taken care of in Section 4. Okay, it's not presently there.
Okay, now where on Section 4 and how would you do that?
Page 4?
Yes, Section 4 it could come at line 11 after the semicolon. Correction. Perhaps to be more logical, at line 13, after the semicolon, the
are
words...
Are you in the mocked-up bill? Are you on page 3?
Yes, sir. Page 4.
Page 4. Page 4. I thought you said section 4.
Page 4, line 13.
Oh, you're talking about sub 4.
Right.
Okay.
Sub 4. Right.
Okay. Good. Sub 4 on page 4. Now, okay, do it again. Start again.
Okay. Would insert after the semicolon
on line 13
okay. After the word law, the language suggested by Senator Groner,
which would be what?
I'm not sure that I could say it as well.
Senator Klingowski?
Mr. Chairman, what we need to do is there are two express statutory provisions that have the conscience clause in it. One is for the private sector, and I was just looking them up. And I think all you really need to do, instead of having any language, is just say nothing. And if I could look at page 4 of the bill, line 10, it would say nothing in this section shall be construed as prohibiting the withholding of amounts authorized in writing by the employee to be contributed by the employee to charitable organizations pursuant to ORS such and such and ORS such and such, which would be the two provisions that provide for the conscience clause amendment. And if I, as soon as I find them, I'll find, okay. Get that for you.
You think that would do
that's
it?
What,
do you
that's
agree,
what
Mr.
You
Levy?
Need.
Would that do it?
Because that will reference the two. Yeah.
Okay. Yes.
Okay.
We would still want to keep something in, I think, that would authorize to any charitable organization, okay. UGN or whatever else as well.
Okay.
The rest of the OEA, please.
Yes, I'd leave the rest.
Now, are there additional amendments?
Okay. Are we through with this particular?
I think we are.
Okay. On line 16 through line 19, this was a statute enacted in 1979. We are simply proposing to move that particular statute out and establish it under its own section, and that is we've taken it out there and put it in a section 7 from line 21 through line 23. It's a private right statute. We believe that it sort of wound up in the wrong place. We don't know why. We felt we should, that it warranted standing by itself.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Section 8 of the bill, correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Levy, but I believe this is legislative councils, which corresponds to our original amendments back in Section 2, dealing with the withholding of money by the Treasury for the $1,000 limit of holding money for Treasury. And it simply was put in there by legislative council to get all the appropriate references. Yeah. Okay.
What was previously too.
Right. Let's see, it's section 8. Section 9 is the same thing, put in by legislative council to get all the appropriate references in.
Now, basically, what you've done is to go through the mocked-up bill and to explain all of the amendments, and the only thing that needs to be changed in the mocked-up bill is what we're suggesting that should be added on page 4, line 11, the pursuant. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Everything else is in the mocked-up bill that you've explained.
Yes, sir.
Okay. So you've heard the proposed amendments in the mocked-up bill. Is there a motion on the amendments?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I have a question.
Sure.
Senator Kulongoski?
Yes.
On your proposed amendments dated 2381, you had another amendment.
We're going to take those up in a minute.
Okay. Okay, so we're not going to deal with that. You just want a motion to...
Could we take... Then we'll go to that.
Okay, I would move.
Okay. The amendments in the mocked-up bill have been moved. Is there any objection to those amendments?
With corrections, with two minor corrections. With
two minor corrections. Mr. Rhea, read them.
On LC amendments dated June 5th, on line 6, after the word requested, a comma... And on line 8, after services, change that to service.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. You've heard the amendments in the mocked-up bill and the slight changes Ms. Rhea suggested. Is there any objection to those amendments? Seeing and hearing none, those amendments are ordered. Now, Senator Kulongoski or Senator Hannon, do you want to go to those other amendments?
Okay. Mr. Chairman, on page 5 indicates there should be a bracket after the... After the word of.
Okay.
So.
Line 8.
Right.
After the word
of. Should be after sub.
So you're deleting subsection 1. What is the subsection 1 that we're deleting?